We had a little meeting at the newcomers meeting here in Bristol Wednesday night that I sat at. And it was very interesting because we talked about this very same thing. And the concept of why we do things, and we were discussing amends steps. And the amends are not, it looks as though you're doing them for them. But then I noticed in my lifetime, when I made an amend towards someone I hated, I never hated that person again. I didn't like him, necessarily, but I didn't hate him. It's almost as though it removes something. I usually hate people to whom I feel guilty. And when I make an amend, the hate goes away. It's a funny phenomenon. But the one thing that always helps is taking an interest in someone, hopefully becoming their sponsor, hopefully communicating to them the thing that saved your life, which is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's a phenomenon in life, and it happens a lot. Families, guys who come up, they work themselves, and they work hard, and they become successful, and then they get children, and they want to preserve their children from that crap they went through, so they never have them work, they live lives of idle luxury, and go to hell. And they forget they're not passing along what they got. People like me, when I was new, I didn't want to be like my old sponsor. I wanted to be kindly and show them I could be lovable. And I lost a lot of guys because I was not having them do the things that I did. It took me about 2 years to find that out. I was about 2 years sober. The first guy I worked with after that, who I didn't have much, I just said, you're going to do this and do that. I don't want to hear your crap. And he stayed sober for 28 years now. So I don't mean that everybody can do it that way, but you have to find your own style. But you got to do something. Action is the magic word. And working with another alcoholic is the number one action in AA. It's nice if you're their sponsor, but you don't have to be their sponsor. What you have to do is be interested in them long enough to give your sick self-obsession a rest. Just a little. I'll be back in a minute. And that's why we're here. Why do we gather together to share our experience, strength, and hope? It's not to hear anything new. I haven't heard anything new in an AA meeting in 25 years. In a quarter of a century, there's nothing new. But every time I go to an AA meeting, I feel a little bit better when I come out. Because it brings myself back to where I am. Because the function of all of these actions is to enable me to live with some growing comfort and ability to discern what is real and what isn't in the world around me. To come to learn some of the things and patterns that have destroyed me in the past. And that's the function of it all. I've been very fortunate. I took actions here that enabled me to change my perceptions enough so over a period of time, I was able to laboriously begin to pray. I would have bet my life I would never pray again because I was an evil man and I prayed God to be dead. And somehow things looked different. And I began to pray and I prayed earnestly for 28 years every day. I've come to believe that God's grace enables me to stay sober. I don't think God keeps me sober. I think God gives me the ability to take actions to stay sober, and the choice is mine whether I choose to take them. And I must remember that, because if I think it's God's responsibility to keep me sober, I don't have to do nothing. When the phone rings, I can say, I don't want to talk to that newcomer. I'm thinking about something else. I don't want to take these actions. I don't want to take this uncomfortable thing I said I would do. I don't want to help people. Some days I don't want to do any of that stuff. But thank God I've been trained here to know that I do it because that's how you feel better. My sponsor died when I was about 2 years sober. He got mad at AA and stayed home for 6 months and got drunk and died. And people said to me, aren't you afraid that you're going to get drunk? Your sponsor's now got drunk. I said, no. He proved with his life what he always told me. If you don't do these things, pretty soon you'll get drunk. And he did. And later I got another sponsor shortly thereafter, somewhere after that. And then Chuck C., who was just the opposite of my sponsor. He was kindly and loving, and he inspired me in a completely different way. For over 25 years, he's my sponsor. But I'll tell you something, that guy that made me hate him when I was new is the one that saved my life. He made me, if Chuck Chamberlain would have been my sponsor when I was new, I would have died drunk. Not because he was a bad sponsor, but because he did not insist. He would not insist I take the actions. He was at a different level. And as we talk about in AA, some of the things we hear, some of the great things we have here are really great. As I mentioned last night, Rabbi Lionel talking, and such a wonderful, I got a great deal out of it. I didn't mean to cavil at it, but I want to tell the newcomers, as good as that makes you feel, that won't keep you sober. That's to enhance your sobriety someday. But that's putting a Band-Aid over cancer if you think it's going to stop your alcoholism. We have the only thing here that works, that has ever worked. That is, treatment centers claim cures. They only claim cures that, the only cures they have are the people who leave there and go to AA. This is the great fact for all of us. This is what works. Alcoholics Anonymous, after all these years, continues to be the only therapeutic in the history of mankind that gets at the root cause of alcoholism, which is the inner, secret, frightened, desperate, lonely self, combined with an unnatural reaction to alcohol that now has the power to correct it. We take away the alcohol, something must fill that void. Nature abhors a vacuum, they say. People go on the wagon, clench their fists, get into church, do this, do that, but they must drink. Alcoholics Anonymous fills that void with its actions, its involvements, its procedures. I know of nothing that'll help you and me more than doing what AA says. When all else fails, work with another alcoholic. Be interested. Get the mind fresh. Hopefully become a sponsor. And then communicate the things that worked for you, not your adjustments to them, so they'll like you. You got to do these things. When I was a young man slipping and sliding out of the Texas Nut House, and I went to AA, they say something in the South of the United States, and they say it in other places too, that it's just dreadful. They say something, my name is Fred, and through the grace of God, I've not had a drink today. I used to sit and think, if I have to depend on the grace of God, it's all over. Through the power of AA. Takes a long trip. In a couple of weeks, it'll be 30 years now since I've had a drink or a pill or anything. And the only therapy I've had is Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a great thing. Oh, no. This is so you'll take up a love offering for my present. Travers has my address if you want to surprise me. The net result of all of it, all the action, all the involvement, all the things we do, I guess I know no better way to say it than to say it tonight. Tomorrow morning I have to fly back to Los Angeles and take the garbage out. This is my last chance to be something for a while. But it's nice to stand here tonight and say, friends of the British Isles, I've come to love and be glad to be with you. I have an interesting thought to tell you. Somehow along the way here, something strange has happened in the last 30 years. And it's an amazing thing, but tonight I can tell you that through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need no longer ever drink again. And for this I am truly grateful. Thank you. My name is Clancy Immersland, and I'm an alcoholic. Good, I found an expensive watch. To the rabbi from all of us. Well, I see they're having a lot of trouble getting the people back in. I understand why they did it. Now, it's always been my experience. When they pass the basket before the speaker, it indicates a certain lack of confidence. But I want to thank Travers for having me here. I won't keep you very long. The meeting has gone on for almost an hour and three quarters now, and I know that many of us want to get back to our hotel and worry. So I will. They're changing the picture too. Well, I don't read foreign copies. But I've had a very wonderful week. I have never been to the British Isles. I've been in France, I've been to New Zealand, a lot of places around the world, but I hadn't been here. And so I've really had a wonderful week. I was up in the Blue Bonnet Conference, vainly trying to understand what the hell they were talking about. Some guy in a dress kept walking up and down. I don't judge. I live in Hollywood. I mean, you know, in Hollywood, it's a little different than here. Here, you use the 12 steps to separate the men from the boys. In some of our groups, we need a crowbar. Had a wonderful trip to Dublin. Really enjoyed that. Some of the folks here that were in Dublin, and then we drove to Belfast. We didn't want to fly and miss any of the fun. Through checkpoints and exciting times, I'll tell you. And then back here, and I spent the day yesterday in London seeing all the things I've read about for years, and then being here today and meeting people from all over. It's really been very pleasant. And it's kind of the only thing that's difficult a little bit tonight. You may wonder why I've been asked to speak, to follow such an excellent, interesting, fascinating, intelligent, defective neurotic. I never thought they'd sink to getting neurotics. You may wonder, Rabbi, well, the only segue I can think of to make is that I'm the secretary of an AA group in Los Angeles. I guess it's the largest group in the world. It's had about 950 people every Wednesday night. Some of you have been at them. And it's so big it can't be held into any church basement. We have had to rent a synagogue. We meet in the sanctuary of a synagogue, the whole plus chairs behind it. So in a real sense, I'm very close to Rabbi Freeling, and I provide a segue. And the rabbi had great stories. I don't have any stories. That's not my bag, but I'll tell you a thing that may or may not be true regarding the university synagogue in Los Angeles. A couple of years ago, they had the first Japanese rabbi in history. At the end of the war, American occupation forces apparently were in Japan. A couple Japanese became converted, was sent to Yeshiva University in Jerusalem, studied, worked hard, became a rabbi, the first Jewish rabbi, I mean Japanese rabbi, and was at the university synagogue in Los Angeles. And he'd been there about 3 months, and the president of the congregation called him in and said they'd have to let him go. And he was upset. He said, "Oh, why you let me go?" do not I know the Talmud as well as anyone? He said, yes. That's not it, Rabbi. That's something different. Well, is it my yellow skin? I do not look Jewish. Is that it? Is it perhaps your parishioners think I do not look Jewish, but my heart is Jewish? No, no, that isn't it. We're not concerned about your appearance, Rabbi. It's something much different. Is it because I am not friendly with the congregation? I give of myself. I try to learn. I try to live. No, that isn't it. Rabbi, well, I guess there's no way around it except to tell you. We've had so many complaints from mothers. They bring in their little boys for circumcision. And they just can't get used to you going, aha! Yeah. I don't have to tell you I'm defective. I think you've guessed that. But I want to talk just for a few minutes tonight because we've had a very wonderful talk, but I want to talk for a couple of minutes something that's kind of struck me. I don't know that you would ever hear very few speakers as spiritually uplifting and encouraging and challenging as the rabbi was tonight. And yet, there's something strange about alcoholics. And that is that men such as the rabbi and others for 5,000 years have been attempting to help alcoholics and other diseased people, but certainly alcoholics, in various forms. And in all of recorded history, the recoveries from alcoholism, because of the intercession of good and interested men, is very low. None at all, almost. Some of the great spiritual men of our time who had the misfortune to have this spirituality, perhaps as clergymen, coupled with a growing disease of alcoholism, have been in a terrible predicament. They have been challengers and promoters of God's word, and they cannot stay sober themselves. What is the reason, what for this irony, that these men today are sent from all over the world? I've been to their facility where they send alcoholic clergymen from all over the world so that non-clergymen, ordinary recovering alcoholics, teach them how to take a series of 12 simple steps, which seem so rudimentary they seem almost ridiculous, and these clergymen go back to their positions throughout the world and stay sober. And the stricture is such that they are the only clergymen that I know of in the world that are given a dispensation to celebrate Mass with unfermented grape juice. Because no matter how deeply they love God, their bodies have a different reaction to alcohol. It is the same problem that deals with some great psychiatric doctors. Dr. Jung, the best doctor of his era, the best doctor in the world of his era. And we know what some of our history is based a little bit on him, where they sent, before the founding of AA, before there was any AA or any thought of any AA, but a very wealthy family on the east coast of New York, or the east coast of Connecticut, had a son who was one of these problem drinkers. And they sent him to Dr. Jung, the best doctor in the world, put him in Dr. Jung's sanitarium in Switzerland, which had some tremendous cures of emotional disabled people, gave Dr. Jung a blank check, spend as much as you want to. And a year later, the boy had been psychiatrically reorganized, emotionally reinforced, psychologically aimed, and he was released. And he was drunk before he got to the ship to come home. And he lay face down in his own vomit. And his parents were appalled, and he was appalled. And they sent him back to Dr. Jung and said, "Doctor, something didn't connect. Could you, here's another check. Do whatever you have to do, but help our boy. Help our boy, whatever it takes." And Dr. Jung gave them those classic words that most of us have heard who understand the history of AA. He said, "I'm sorry, I thought I could help your son. I thought he was emotionally disabled. But I see now that it is much worse than that. Apparently he is what is known as an alcoholic. And today, to the best of my knowledge, there is no effective help for him available in the world." And that was 1932, folks, not very long ago. No inspirational people, no medical people, no psychiatric people. There was nobody who could seem to keep an alcoholic sober. And not from lack of effort, a great many people tried. And as we all know, he came back and he eventually tried to help somebody else who tried to help somebody else who became the first person to stay sober. A lot of people wonder what happened to Roland. Nobody knows, really. Funny thing, you know what happened to Roland? Nobody really knows, but he didn't go to AA. And he stayed sober in the Oxford group. But by the time he died, some 7 or 8 years after the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous, he had not been to AA. And to this day, his family has never announced what he died from. So there's some thought that maybe he was a relapsed alcoholic at the end. Wouldn't make a difference one way or another. But it would certainly follow that people who do not take certain therapeutics that work for alcoholics eventually wind up drinking again. But nobody knows. I was thinking as I sat there tonight, I want to make this so clear. I am in no way criticizing what the rabbi said, because I gained a great deal from it. But at a level lower than spiritual enhancement, there's something, the difference between religion and its appeal. And what Alcoholics Anonymous must do, and has been the first agency to, and the only agency to do successfully in the history of mankind, is this. In a sense, religion uplifts and brings new thoughts and understanding to the mind. As a result of this, eventually, hopefully, the actions of that individual will become changed over a period of time, and they will find a spiritual way of life. I think that's a safe evaluation. Alcoholics Anonymous does the same thing, but in a reverse order, because that order doesn't work for alcoholics. The reverse order of Alcoholics Anonymous is this. Alcoholics Anonymous says, you will take certain actions even before you believe in them. Over a period of time, and eventually, your thinking will change and you will become uplifted. And you will get to the same place. You will eventually find a spiritual way of living. So we are all aiming for a spiritual way of living. not a religious way of living, religious, but spiritual, living at peace with God as you understand him, and man, and certainly, as the rabbi said so well, the imperfections within ourselves and the imperfections around us. It's really ironic. You know, in the late 1950s, Yale University conducted the only major study of alcoholism ever made. At that time, they thought, if we could just find out what causes alcoholics, we can cure it. And they had all sorts of tests and people, and they gave alcoholics drinks and measured their reactions, and gave non-alcoholics drinks and measured their reactions, and they gave them psychological testings, and they came up with a report this thick, and it was really beautiful. And they, the only two things they found that all known alcoholics had in common, as I said the other night, it must have been fun to be part of that test as a sample alcoholic, you know. Today we're testing two drinks. Thank you. One, two. Well, that's all the tests for today. Bullshit, just give me. We're going to run a little test later, doctor. But the only things they ever found that all known alcoholics they studied had in common, to get this down to one sentence, this thick report. Of all psych backgrounds, they couldn't, one, they didn't understand, and two, they couldn't figure out. One, all alcoholics seem to have a more pronounced change in their psychological profile after drinking than non-alcoholics did. Didn't know why. We call it a personality change today. We take it for granted. If you don't have that, why drink? If I was satisfied being the way I was, I wouldn't be here. And the other one is this. They all rank very high in perfectionism on their psychological profile. Isn't that something? Among the most defective personalities in the world, and they insist on perfection in everyone else. All I want is things to be right, or screw it. And we've all lived that. And I think that's one of the great problems with alcoholics in their lives, because their need for perfection is not out there any more than it is inside. And I think, as the rabbi said tonight, it's a great help to realize that other people are defective, because so often we don't find that out. We compare our insides against their outsides and find ourselves lacking. In fact, one of the great things we seek, apparently, in AA, we talk about it all the time. Coming to AA and trying to find humility. Very elusive thing, this humility. How do you get humility? Well, it's quite obvious. You take arrogant newcomers and tear them down until they find humility. I'll tell you a little secret that I believe to be absolutely true from my experience. And that is this. I have never known an alcoholic, especially a new one in our fellowship, who is truly arrogant. They may think they are, but they're not. The hallmark of alcoholics is feeling different than, and less than, and different than. And we put up defense mechanisms that we must have up to protect us against the world. Now, all human beings have defense mechanisms, but you don't think about it when you're the one with it. You think there's a trick that you fall into, and it's really a dreadful thing. And we've all done it, and we'll all do it again. When you're feeling rotten, And feeling lousy, it's so easy to fall into a little thing where it looks like to me they are what they seem to be. I'm the only one that has to fake it all the time. It just doesn't seem right. Now, in college, university, I knew it. I read about people having, all the people having defense mechanisms. And I know that. But it doesn't have any effect when I'm feeling rotten and judging people. And defense, people have all sorts of these mechanisms. And you got to remember that. We are not different in that way. Probably the only thing different about us is our immature attitude toward it. When I was young, I used to read a lot of books. I used that as my defense mechanism. A lot of people do. They say things like, what we've been arguing about, did you ever read what Nietzsche said about that? No, I didn't think you had. That keeps the fools at bay. But there's all thousands of defense mechanisms. The other end to that is a guy saying, I got a new Harley, and I'm going to drive it up your ass. Same thing. Just... Now, everybody lives with defense mechanisms. Everybody lives lives as the philosopher, or the, I guess, philosopher, you might call them. People live lives of quiet desperation. But they find the limits they can live, and they find what they can do and not do and get away with. What makes an alcoholic different than that? An alcoholic has been truly blessed and cursed. The blessing is the curse. In addition to being defective, as all other human beings are defective, alcoholics have one other thing. Alcohol has an unusual effect that it doesn't have on 95% of people, perhaps. It has the ability to change that defect. My defenses, my arrogances, apparent arrogances, but are not really arrogances, they can come true. For a while, I can be what I've been pretending. I don't realize that, because I didn't know until I was in AA sometime that alcohol didn't do that for everybody. I thought it did that for everybody. And the reason people didn't drink it is they didn't need it. I thought they were just, I always thought, they are what they seem to be. I'm the one that seems to be at a disadvantage all the time, pretending. In AA, I discovered what makes me different from most of my fellows, and you are different from most of your fellows. Alcohol has the ability to literally change your perception of reality. And it doesn't do that for most people. But who would know that? You have no way to judge. It can temporarily build up to what it fills my holes and makes me what I want to be. And it never struck me that it's making me unusually secure. It just seemed to me it is merely bringing me to where they've been all along. And that's a great thing. When alcohol in an alcoholic goes boom, and the world begins to change. Come on, baby. And I want to be around other people who understand life. Other people who are at a bar late at night. When I'm in a bar late at night at 1 a.m. and all the wimps have gone home and the real people are there, and the guy says, hey, let's go to Las Vegas. I want to hear people say, yeah! I don't want to be around some little wimp that says, why? I'd better call Betty. Why don't you go home to Betty, you little puke? Now, tomorrow morning, I may not remember how I felt as I'm hitchhiking back from Las Vegas. Wondering how I'll explain this, but that's my life. There's a good, you know, just in passing, there's an excellent argument can be made. In the second step, they talk about, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's always kind of a sensitive subject for people like us, for people like me. I've been in the insane asylum, and I wasn't even crazy. So what would it be if I was crazy? It would be pretty bad. I never minded. When I was slipping around day and having difficulty, I never had any problem saying I was an alcoholic because I secretly didn't feel I was an alcoholic. But if someone would have said, is there anyone here who is secretly crazy? There's one back there. Stone him, stone him. Because I secretly wonder if I'm crazy. Sometimes I secretly wonder if I'm crazy. Now, what is sanity? You know something funny? There's about you could read 100 textbooks on sanity and you'll read 100 different definitions. Sanity is absolutely, I used to think at one time that sanity, if you were really sane, you'd be smiling and happy all the way through life. Then I realized I've only known one guy who was happy and smiling all the time. He had the next bed to mine in the electric shock ward. Morning, noon, or night. I said, how are you doing, Fred? Just fine, just fine. I began to remember, he's never going to get out of there until he stops smiling. That means he's goofy. Sanity is a very, very difficult thing to identify. Oddly enough, insanity is easy to define. Psychosis is easy to define. There's a lot of ramifications, but for the sake of simplifying it to ultra simple, when the human mind is under sufficient conflict, intensity of conflict, intensity and duration, it gets so bad, so long, and there's no way to, you have no tools to cope with it. Eventually, in some minds, the pain gets so intense that the mind snaps, or doesn't snap. It fights for survival. It will bring down the final defense. It will make reality look different than it is to resolve that conflict. In some people, it's just one thing. In some people, as a whole, everything is wild. That is called psychosis. And when your brain snaps and you become psychotic, we talk in AA a lot of time about, well, I was psychotic one year, then I wasn't, then I was, then I wasn't. You don't go back and forth in psychosis. Once you've been in psychosis, you just about always stay there. And you, in most cases, are sometimes hospitalized for the rest of your life. You don't get better in psychosis. Cases of recovery are 1 in 1 billion. What we mistake as psychosis is intense neurosis with a lot of conflict. It is more comfortable to be psychotic than neurotic. Now, this is what insanity is. An altered perception of reality. Now, here's a funny thing. Alcoholics almost never become psychotic. The cases of alcoholics becoming psychotic are 1 in 1 million. So slim you'd ever think about it. But you say, they say alcoholism is the second greatest cause of insanity. And it is. But not from psychosis. Alcoholic insanity is caused by brain damage. It's the same sort of thing that affects people with the tertiary stage of syphilis. People with alcoholic insanity aren't going around the streets acting funny and hollering. Most of you will never see a case of alcoholic insanity. I see a lot of them, and I wish I didn't. When you find a case of alcoholic insanity, true insanity, they sit in a chair or on a bed, and people come three times a day and change their diapers and feed them and put them to bed and get them up and change their diapers and feed them. And they can never get better. It's very much like syphilis, except in syphilis, the disease has the decency to kill the patient. In alcoholism, you can sit like that for 40 years. Never know your name, never know anything. But alcoholics almost never become psychotic, as we describe psychosis. Why not? When it gets bad enough, long enough, alcoholics drink alcohol to resolve the conflict. Then, why don't these other 95% of people, when they have these conflicts, why don't they drink alcohol to resolve the conflicts? And the answer is, they do, but it doesn't resolve the conflict. This is the great fact to understand. What makes an alcoholic is not what alcohol does to you, it's what it does for you. As a result of it doing something for you, you'll be trapped into towards killing you. But what does a drink do for an alcoholic? It changes their perception of reality to resolve the conflict. So, I think it's safe to say, if you want to say it this way, an alcoholic has the ability to induce temporary psychosis. That's exactly what you do. You induce temporary psychosis. You alter your relationship to your environment. You alter your perception of reality. You can induce psychosis. So maybe what the second step, if you really want to read it literally, came to believe that a power greater than ourself, which we'll talk about some other time, could restore me to sanity. Could restore me to what? Could restore me to living in reality all the time. And that's what alcoholics can't do. And that's when you come here, you have to try to come to believe things like that, because it's impossible to believe them. Because my insides and my outsides don't match. Well, get humble. How do you become humble? Well, you tear down this outside. False. I'll tell you how to make people humble, to the best of my knowledge, at least in my experience. You have to build them up until they can become humble. As you build them up and they get a little more security and take steps and do these things, they can eventually take down the defense mechanisms that have left them trapped inside. Then you can understand the rabbi saying we're all defectives. Because when those walls are up, I don't even identify with that. But when I'm somewhat secure, I can admit that I'm insecure. It's a funny phenomenon. And that's what makes Alcoholics Anonymous such a unique situation. That despite not only centuries, but millenniums of people trying to help alcoholics, there's been no response, of any measurable response. And wonderful, kindly, good, intelligent people have devoted their lives to helping people like you and me. There are people who've given their lives to the treatment of alcoholics, as well as that priest who went to Molokai and worked with lepers. They just, and with no result. And that's why it's important that you and I have to remember, in the abstract, that this is a rather precious gift. Somehow in the last 50 years, 53 years, something has changed in the history of mankind. This is the 35th anniversary of AA in Bristol. Last Sunday was the 35th Blue Bonnet get-together.